You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today I'm talking with Daniel Saure about everything you need to know about matching adjusted indirect comparisons. So if you like some more technical, some more innovative episodes in this podcast, then this episode is exactly the right one for you. We talk about all kinds of the technical details of doing a matching adjusted indirect comparison. A matching adjusted indirect comparison is a really, really nice and elegant way to better adjust for the different biases that you can introduce by doing an indirect comparison, and therefore a very, very useful method to know for comparing treatments when you don't have head-to-head data available. So this is a really, really helpful episode because it can help you in designing head-to-head studies, in better understanding the comparative landscape. It can help you in better understanding how your product or your new compound lines up against key competitors, and it can help you to better inform decisions for payers, physicians, and patients. And probably in the future, I would guess that that also becomes much more a topic for discussions, for example, with regulators. So stay tuned for this really, really nice episode. If you love the podcast, then join the LinkedIn group and follow me on LinkedIn, because I'm regularly posting lots of additional content there. And please tell your colleagues about this podcast. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library with lots of free content there, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. It's really, really cost-effective. It's just £20 for non-high-income countries and just £95 for high-income countries, which currently is approximately more or less the same in dollar or in euro. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of the Effective Statistician. And today I'm talking with friend and former colleague, Daniel. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine. We are still in lockdown as we are recording this, and things are opening up, and it's a wonderful spring evening as we are recording this. And so great to talk today, not so much about weather, but about indirect comparisons and what we can do about it to make them more efficient, more better, rather than just the usual techniques. But before we go into that, Daniel, maybe you can introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, and first of all, so thank you very much for the invitation. So I'm very much looking forward to this. So it's my first one to tonight. So I'm really looking forward. So my name is Daniel. I'm based in Germany, and after finishing school, so I started to study mathematics with international economics. So I did a bachelor and master here in the middle of Germany, basically in Mainz. And when I finished this, and as I already focused on stochastic in my study, so I wanted to continue this and maybe work a little bit more in real life. And I then decided to join the Institute of Medical Biometry and Informatics in Heidelberg, also Germany. So and here I really started to work as a biometrician. So I was involved in planning, conduct, and analysis of phase 1, 2, 3 trials. This was really a great experience. And also I was part of the systematic review and meta-analysis working group. So here I got first insights into that topic, and I also did my PhD on this. So in detail, in this thesis, I wondered, okay, how to early detect safety signals during drug development process. So because, so when you do small trials, phase 1, 2, 3, maybe with maybe up to 500 patients, you're most often not likely to detect any side effects which maybe occur in one of 10,000 patients. So therefore, the idea was, okay, what can you do about this? And one application is so-called sequential meta-analysis. So this is you apply adaptive designs that we all know from clinical trials to meta-analysis. Yeah, so you update your meta-analysis after a new study is there, and in order to control type 1 error and so on, you then apply some known formats, and I try to investigate if is this possible, and if yes, how is the performance and how to implement this in practice. Yeah, and with this, as I said, I was only involved in early phase, but with this, I also got involved into late phase development, and therefore my aim was, okay, maybe to work more practical in after phase 3, so to say. And then I had the opportunity to join Lilly, I think around 4 years ago, nearly. And yeah, actually, I joined your group. I started to work in dermatology, basically. So this is, really to support the products after regulatory approval, so to say. I'm still doing this today. And today I'm the statistical lead for all dermatology in a specific region for Eli Lilly. Yeah, this is maybe in a nutshell where I'm coming from. Yeah.
And during this time we worked a lot together on all kind of the indirect comparisons, because there has been a lot of advances in new biologics entering the market in dermatology and rheumatology. And so, of course, you can't run head-to-head comparisons against all these different drugs. Mm. And especially early in development, you're very interested in understanding what are the indirect comparisons in terms of the efficacy of these different drugs. And that was a question that came, of course, from treating physicians, as well as those who write treatment guidelines or also HTA buddies. And there's, of course, the approach to do network meta-analysis, where you go into all the available evidence, but sometimes it's actually much better to look into one-to-one comparisons. So just compare one treatment versus the other. What were your kind of experiences when this type of one-to-one approach is actually better than using network meta-analysis?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I think there's one common approach, which is the so-called Bucher approach, and I think you already had this in some previous episode. So this is, so to say, maybe a special case of a classic network meta-analysis when you only have maybe two treatments with one common comparator. So in this case, it's clear. So either you perform NMA or Bucher approach, it's basically the same. But so also in the case you have a wider network with maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 treatments, so there might still be some further interest in 2 or 3 treatments of this, because, for example, the treatments are in the same treatment class or in the same mode of action. And with this, you often get a lot of questions that you did not answer in the first NMA, because they are so specific, and maybe you do not have all the data for all comparators so that you can run specific analysis in the NMA. But then you can maybe stick down to this smaller network and try to answer specific and more detailed questions. So in the case you have the data for one treatment on the left-hand side, so to say, and then for the other treatment on right-hand side. And I think in this case, basically, then it's often favorable to run this maybe Bucher approach, or in the case you even have individual patient level data, then you can also run this so-called matching adjusted indirect comparison. And the advantage of this approach is then really that you can, before you run the indirect comparison, you can balance the studies. So for example, you have your own trial comparing A versus treatment C, and then you have another trial comparing B versus C. So then you obviously can build up this network and compute this indirect evidence of A versus C. But if your
A versus B,
exactly.
Exactly.
And in the case, so when the BC trial, so we most often call this the aggregated data or the data that we get from literature. If, for example, there you have a mean age of, 40, and in your own trial you have a mean age of 50, and you think that the age has an effect or influence the treatment effect, actually, then this might be an unfair comparison. And then you can balance your studies. And I think we will talk about this later on. And then run this Bucher approach later on. And I think in this case, it's favorable to apply this method.
I think it's also, one of the principles that I go often with is if you can do it more simple, then it's probably good to do it more simple. Mm-hmm. And instead of, if you're just interested in comparing A to B, then you don't need to look into all these other parts of the network so much, because that will hardly contribute very much to your conclusion about A to B. And the other point is you can look into maybe much more specific studies. So let's say you have most of your studies are maybe that you would have in a network meta-analysis are just long short-term studies, and maybe you, for the specific case, you have a couple of similar long-term studies. And of course, if you have just a couple of studies to look into, you can investigate it much more deeply and have a much more kind of much more clarity of what actually goes into the study than if you combine dozens and dozens or maybe hundreds of studies into one big network meta-analysis, where kind of the overview of what goes into the analysis is rather easily lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a valid point, I think. And what also plays into this is that for this Bucher or MAKE approach, you usually have less requirements as compared to NMA. So this means it's... So in the case you have maybe 100 trials and they are maybe not that similar, then you might run into problems when you run the model in the NMA. And this is less likely in the smaller network, obviously. And then you have the chance then if you only focus on two treatments, then you maybe can even include more studies again that you might have excluded previously in the NMA. Yeah. So sometimes MAKE and NMA are also addressing different research questions, so to say, or different estimates. Yeah. So this is maybe,
Okay. As we are now going into the more the comparisons of the Bucher approach, the classical approach, and the matching adjusted indirect comparison or MAKE approach, so to say, where do you see the advantages and disadvantages of one versus the other?
So you're meaning MAKE versus Bucher or MAKE versus NMA?
MAKE versus Bucher.
Okay. So this depends on the situations. So basically with the classic Bucher approach, so this only relies on aggregated data. So there is no need to have any individual patient level data. So everyone who has maybe two publications at hand, so one from study A comparing A versus C and then the publication of study comparing B versus C, then you can just take the numbers and compute your Bucher approach. Yeah. So this is, I think, quite easy to implement. However, the Bucher approach might be biased in the case your AC trial is not similar as compared to the BC trial. For example, in and exclusion criteria are maybe not entirely the same. And one other reason, obviously, is if when you look to the baseline characteristics. So if they are different, or maybe if there are some important baseline characteristics, for example, age, and there's a huge difference, then, as I said previously, the Bucher approach might be an unfair comparison. And here is then the advantage of the make approach. So as I said here, you really can take your individual patient level data and define specific weights to each patient so that your mean age, for example, of your own trial is then the same as you have found in the literature. So basically for this kind of cases, or for this case, so to say, the make might be favorable over Bucher. However, as usually, this goes hand in hand with some costs, and this is in terms of information. So as I said, if you have the case of maybe some imbalance across the baseline characteristics, then you, as I said, the Bucher approach will be biased, which means that actually your effect is not the same. Das sage ich jetzt nochmal. So in the case that you have difference across your baseline characteristics, for example, in age, you have a mean age of 40 versus a mean age of 50, your estimated treatment effect with the Bucher might be biased and wrong. Yeah. And here, with application of make, when you balance your patients and balance the mean age of your study to the published one, then maybe your treatment effect is closer to the real one, but you have a loss of information. And this is called, in this case, the effective sample size. So basically, this means we win a better treatment effect, but we lose precision, so to say.
So we trade basically less bias for yep. more variability or more,
exactly.
or more less imprecision. Yeah, less precision.
Exactly. And yeah, so coming back to the advantages and disadvantages of both. So I think one requirement you need for make is that you have individual patient level data, at least for one trial. So this is what you really need. If you don't have this, you cannot conduct it. Yeah. So this is the basic requirement. So, but if you have this at hand, then it really depends. If you think that you have some imbalances across your studies, and in this case, yeah, then obviously I think make should be conducted. But what we all always do, or what I think it is recommended anyway, to perform both analysis to see actual what is the impact of the weighting to the actual result as compared to the unweighted comparison.
So yeah, I would completely agree with that. The Bucher is kind of, it's very simple to do anyway, and therefore should always be included. In terms of acceptance from payers for that, so especially the English payer, the NICE is really interested in that, and has they have worked quite a lot on that, and have recently published a technical document, which you will find in the show notes. And it also nicely includes some example R code, so which is really good for you to reproduce the example case there, and then better understand how that works and how you can actually implement the method. In terms of the technical document, what are your kind of key takeaways from this document?
So, this is really a nice document, and it's called Methods for Population Adjusted Indirect Comparisons in Submissions to NICE. The main key takeaway really is that the application of make is recommended in specific circumstances, and this is really, and I think we touched this before, in the presence of so-called treatment effect modifier. So these are characteristics or baseline characteristics where you think those might have an impact on the actual treatment effect. And if you have an imbalance across those treatment effect modifiers across your trials, in this case, the Bucher approach might be biased, and then really the make approach is recommended.
So both conditions need to apply. It needs to be a treatment effect modifier, And there needs to be an imbalance between the studies. So on the, if you think about the indirect comparison on the AC study, it needs to be different than on the BC study.
Exactly. I think especially the latter point is easy to check. You can just, usually you just look to table one of the publications and compare the baseline characteristics. But regarding the first point, so the definition of a treatment effect modifier, I think to my knowledge, there is no gold standard at the moment. And this is really, I think, one point of criticism usually when you apply MAKE, because you really need to prove, so to say, that a specific characteristics is a treatment effect modifier. And the question is how to do this.
You need to have some kind of baseline versus treatment interaction there in some model or in the model that you're using.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this is what I was about to say. So I think one point is really that you look to it from statistical point of view, that you really go into your data and you apply some specific model. So depending on your data and check. So which characteristics have an interaction.
Yeah.
Really,
but of course, how big does the interaction need to be? Does it need to be kind of statistically significant, or does it, whatsoever relevant difference there? You know, especially if you, for example, have smaller, so very imbalanced subgroups. So let's say you have. You look into gender and you have 80% of male versus 20% of female, then of course, just showing a statistically significant interaction becomes much harder than if you have a 50-50 split. That, of course, is, it's a nice guidance, but it's not more of a black and white guidance, really.
Yeah.
And the same is also for what is difference between studies. If I look into the, in one study you have 80 to 20% and the other you have 75 to 25% ratio, is that already a difference? Mm-hmm. I think, but both need to apply. And of course, the bigger the one of these is, the bigger the overall effect becomes. Both basically multiply with each other.
Yeah, exactly. And even if you just say maybe in your model the p-value needs to be less than 10%, for example, if this is your definition from a statistical point of view, then you might end up that one characteristic is maybe a treatment effect modifier at week 8, but if you run the same model at week 12, for example, then maybe it's not a treatment effect modifier anymore. So this is another problem then. And then the question is, so in the case here, you apply this MAKE to several time points, what is then your set of baseline characteristics that you match for? Yeah, so this is another question. But maybe apart from the statistic consideration of treatment effect modifier, I think one can maybe even go one step beyond and already define these characteristics at study planning phase. So maybe that you already put into your protocol of your phase 3 trial, okay, these characteristics might play an important role in this disease. And then you have maybe some further guidance from medical point of view. So what could be a treatment effect modifier? Yeah. And I think obviously you can also refer to other publications. And when we go back to the specific case of NICE submission, so there might be already some other submissions. And then you can maybe have a look, okay, which characteristics have been applied in this document. And then you can maybe, take this guidance as well. But I think in general, it's a difficult question, how to define a so-called treatment effect modifier.
Yeah. And as we are talking about this treatment effect modifier, of course, we have, two treatment preferences. Yeah, we have A versus C and B versus C. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be only a treatment effect modifier for one of them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to be, for both of them. For one of them is sufficient to have an impact. Okay, so with that, we already talked a lot about which baseline variables to include. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a really, really important one. And sometimes also, you know, practical reasons play a role. So if you have data for one, but not for from the literature study, or you have it from the literature study, but you haven't captured in your own study, well, then it's difficult to include and to justify it.
Yeah, this is one major limitation, because obviously when you are on the side that you have individual patient level data, or you have data from a phase 3 trial, then you usually have a lot of data and a lot of characteristics to include, but the limitation is given from the literature, basically. Yeah. And when you then look to it, then you find 5 or 6 characteristics, and then you can only adjust for those, obviously. And also, if you have defined some treatment effect modifier beforehand and you do not find them in the publication, then you cannot adjust for this. And then your comparison might still be biased. So this is then one limitation that still is there. And this brings me just to another point that I forgot previously when you talked or when you asked for advantages and disadvantages of MAKE. So obviously, when you apply this MAKE approach and you reweight your patients so that you balance for the differences across baseline characteristics, you might even introduce further bias. So the point here is unmeasured confounding, because there might be still some other characteristics that you did not collect. So neither in your trial nor in the published one. And then there might be some unseen unbalance in those. So this is also one big limitation of this approach which there needs to be discussed in the end.
So you might introduce other bias that you're just not aware about.
So you reduce maybe some known bias, but you might introduce some further unknown bias, and obviously you cannot guess how big the bias in the end will still be.
And of course, in the Bucher approach, you can have known and unknown bias both at the same time.
Exactly. That's true. And back to the point. So which baseline characteristics to include? So I think that the main point really is the limitation comes from the literature. So you really only can adjust for what you know from the literature. So this is the basic point. But also the endpoints that you find in a publication, they really need to be the same as compared to those that you investigated in your own trial. So, and this is, for example, especially true maybe for safety endpoints. So you really make sure that they are based on the same definition, so even on the same time point. And if this is a given, then I think you're happy to analyze this in this approach. But this is really one further limitation that you really need to check, that the definition of the endpoints is really similar.
That's really important. As we are talking about baseline variables, one other thing is sometimes you may have similar means in terms of, as we talked about, age or weight, but maybe you have some different standard deviations. Mm-hmm. Can you take that into account as well?
Yes, you can in theory. So the whole matching approach is basically motivated by a propensity score measuring, and the specific method here in the original publication is the method of moments. And as this name indicates, you can, in theory, adjust for all moments. So the first moment, obviously, is the mean. The second moment is the variance or standard deviation, and so on. So you can adjust for all this in theory. But this is then also related to further computational effort, obviously. Because the basic case really is if you apply the MAKE just for the first moments, then you really get one system of equations. And so from a mathematical point of view, you can prove that there is one single solution. So you get really one weight per patient, so that there is a balance across all the mean baseline characteristics. And you also can get then another system of equations for the second moments and so on. So in theory, this is a given. And probably it's also to recommend not only to wait for the first moment, but also for the second, because what you see when you wait for the first moment, then you have they are really then equal across the trials. But when you then look to the variances, there might be some difference, which then might also impact the p-value in the end.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing that we specifically worked on in the last couple of years is cases where you have not just one study that you compare and where you have individual patient level data with one other study that is literature data, but also if you have on either side more than one study. So maybe you have two or three placebo-controlled studies for your compound, and you have access to the patient-level data, and then you have similar studies for the competition that you want to look into, placebo-controlled studies. What kind of challenges do come with this kind of setup? So obviously we can, first match and then pool, or we can first kind of pool the studies and then match. What is kind of the better approach, and where are the differences?
Yeah, and so this is quite a realistic case that you do not only have one trial on each side, but several ones. So, and I think before you conduct an analysis, I think you first need to check that really your trials are similar, not only on one side, but across the sides. And this is really one basic requirement, not only of NMA or Bucher, but also of MAKE. And basically all requirements of Bucher also apply to MAKE immediately. So this is really similarity. So your trials need to be similar. So the best start, obviously, is if the in and exclusion criteria are really the same. Maybe even the countries are the same. The centers probably not. But this is maybe then what you can really check as well in your baseline characteristics then. So this is really one thing that needs to be fulfilled, and also homogeneity and transitivity, obviously. So then if you have several trials on one, I think the basic approach is really to do some meta-analysis. So this is you combine all your trials on each side, and then end up with one mean effect estimate, so to say. On your side, where you have individual patient level data, you maybe even have individual patient level data for all studies, then you can apply meta-analysis for individual patient level data, so which is the gold standard approach for meta-analysis, and this is really to recommend and recommend in literature. So in this case, you can really do that. And on the other side as well, you can apply classic pairwise meta-analysis and combine the single mean values to a mean of the means, so to say. And then you can start to apply the weighting approach of MAKE.
Yeah. So then you need to basically compute average baseline variables across the different studies on both sides. That average is then a weighted average, yeah?
Yeah.
Weighted with the sample sizes.
Exactly. Yeah, so depending on the method of your meta-analysis, but if you apply the classic generic inverse variance meta-analysis, then it's basically depending on the sample size of the study.
Okay.
But these weights are then not used anymore in the MAKE, so then you compute another set of weights, but just then on a patient level.
There's a couple of as we are talking about adjustments, you mentioned earlier that in the first publication of the MAKE, the method of moments was used. There's a couple of other ways you can adjust for as well. What are these?
Yeah, that's true. I think there's a bulk of methods, and to my knowledge, I think there's a lot of research still going on. So so as I said, I think the initial approach was really to apply the methods of moments per study. So this really means, so in our case, we have two treatments arm per study, and we take the mean value across the patients regardless of the treatment. Yeah, so this is what we wait for. And this is the initial approach. Then I think there was some further research investigating, okay, maybe you can not only take this mean values, but the mean values per treatment arm, so that you actually have two means per study, and then you adjust the two means to the two other means, respectively. Yeah, yeah. So I think those methods have been investigated so far. I think in some cases there might be a favor even for the weighting per treatment arm method, so to say, although you can obviously argue that you break randomization with this approach. But still, maybe from a pure numerical point of view, just seem to have some favor in some cases. But yeah, apart from this method of moments, I think there's the broader topic of entropy balancing, so which basically has some further requirement when you compute your weights. So this requirement is that your weights need to be as close to the uniform distribution as possible. Mm-hmm. So this is some side requirement. And with this, you obviously have some further equation in your model, which needs to get solved. But this is also applied. I think there was also some research on this. Maybe we can refer to this one. I think these are basically the two major principles at the moment. I think when we also look to the NICE document that we have mentioned earlier in this episode, I think there's also the simulated treatment comparison approach, which might also have some advantages in some cases. And maybe just briefly speaking, if you take this approach, you start with your individual patient level data, and in your study you then run some models again to estimate which characteristics have a specific influence to your outcome, and with this coefficients then you can compute this value for your aggregated data, so for the data that you get from the literature, and with this you then also get some estimate and you can compute an inverse comparison. I think this is the third, not last one, but third important method which is available at the moment. And I think there's much more to come, not only with regard to make, but also in the context of NMA.
Yeah, in terms of the simulated treatment comparison, I still wonder, it looks a little bit like you're simulating your evidence. Yeah, so mm-hmm. With the Bucher and the Mai, kind of mm-hmm. the evidence that you get is given by the sample sizes in your studies. And, mm-hmm. and that kind of gives you kind of an upper boundary of what you can get to. Mm-hmm. In terms of the simulated treatment comparisons, there's this, the sample size is pretty much taken. That makes me a little bit mm-hmm. wary about that. That approach, because mm-hmm. I have the perception you can just kind of simulate your patients that you have mm-hmm. really studied.
Yeah.
And so there I'm a little bit skeptical, just from a kind of mm-hmm. maybe it's a philosophical question, but mm-hmm. I'm personally not feeling very, very comfortable with that.
Okay. Interesting point. Yeah, I never thought about this, but yeah.
There's a couple of case studies already out there mm-hmm. as well that use these different approaches, and we'll link to one specific one from dermatology in the show notes as well, so that you can see this is not just kind of theoretical work, it's also applied to real case studies. If you search for this matching adjusted indirect comparison, you'll probably find some more case studies as well. So today we talked really a lot about indirect comparison and had a deep dive into the different approaches in terms of how to adjust for treatment effect modifiers, so variables that have an effect on the treatment effect. And here are also different between the different arms of this indirect comparisons. We refer to the nice technical document that also has this nice R code in it. Mm-hmm. And we also discussed about what to do if you have more than one study
in one of the different arms of the indirect comparisons. And so with that, thanks so much, Danielle, for this really, really nice discussion about the topic. Do you have any kind of final thought for the listener?
Yeah, again, thank you very much for this possibility. So some final thoughts. I think make is not the answer to every question. I think we talked about this. This is a lot of disadvantages, but only also a lot of advantages. So depending on the situation at hand, I think it really applies of the research question. So which method to apply? So either you apply Bucher or Make or NMA. I think when you really want to get the full picture and the competitive landscape, then I think NMA still is the best way forward. But then if you want maybe go to the data into more detail and have specific questions to maybe two or three comparators of interest, then I think really this method can provide further knowledge. But yeah, I think, as I said, this is not the end. There will be a couple of more methods for this kind of networks or situations. And I think we can stay tuned in this field. And I'm looking forward for new topics and methods in this.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Go over to theeffectivestatistician.com to find the show notes with all the different references that we mentioned in the podcast today, so that you can implement these methods as well and have all the corresponding documents there. You can there also find much more content that helps you to boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. Finally, please tell your colleagues about this podcast and join the LinkedIn group. And as always, reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.